We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby met with media during a teleconference this afternoon. Hear what he has to say coming up right after this.
West Virginia fans, stay up to date on all things Mountaineers at WVUSports.com. WVUSports.com has 24/7 access to all of your favorite Mountaineer teams. The site's modern design provides the same fan-friendly experience on a mobile phone as it does on a desktop computer. Watch videos, listen to podcasts, and read feature stories anytime, anyplace. WVUSports.com, the official home of the West Virginia Mountaineers.
Welcome, everyone, to the Big 12 Update Call. I will now turn the call over to Bob Berta with Big 12.
Thank you, Tammy, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining. We all know that there are more questions than answers currently about the impact of COVID-19 on the sports landscape and the anticipated return to athletic activities. To provide his perspective on the effect of the current environment on the state of the Big 12 Conference and the national intercollegiate athletics landscape in general, Commissioner Bob Bowlsby has graciously consented to today's media teleconference. We will begin today's session with Commissioner Bowlsby's opening remarks before opening the call up to questions. Bob?
Thanks, Bob, and best wishes to all of you. I hope your families are safe and healthy, and that you are getting through the various lockdown stages all over the country. It's I'm working from home like you probably are, and I have the benefit of an occasional drop into my office from my 4-year-old grandson or my 1-year-old granddaughter who live across the street from me. So if you hear a little background noise, that's probably what you're hearing. It's fun to be home a little bit. I have to tell you that I am finding it quite odd and in some ways very taxing, because things that are very easy while you're in the office are complicated and difficult when you're out of the office. And I know many of you work from home and from remote locations, so you're accustomed to it, but I'm not. And we're in unprecedented times. It was 2 weeks ago today that we shut down the Big 12 men's and women's tournaments and the rest of our championship activities and regular season activities. Just a week ago now, it seems like a lot longer that we missed the first day of March Madness. And so the number of changes in the last 2 weeks are really quite extraordinary. Our campuses, excuse me, our campuses have experienced an awful lot of change as well. I can't imagine the number of moving parts that our presidents and chancellors have. Some of them have had more challenges than others. I think most of you are aware that President Fenves at the University of Texas was exposed because his wife and daughter were diagnosed with coronavirus, and they're both doing well, I'm told, and he was not infected, has tested negative. And so, the reach of this goes way beyond athletics, and in some ways, athletics gets rendered to an appropriate second-class citizenship as a result of all that's going on in our world. I have spent my time over the last 2 weeks. We have daily calls with the A5 conference commissioners and staffs. I have met at least twice a week by conference call with our athletics directors, some weeks more than that. Our CEOs have met, I believe, five times by conference call over the last 2 weeks. Had several NCAA calls with NCAA leadership and staff. And it might surprise you to hear that the name, image, and likeness components that I've been involved with through our NCAA working group are continuing to move forward. We were working in person for the most part, but have now moved those things to teleconferences. And then the Collegiate Commissioners Association, which is the leaders of the 32 conferences, are getting together with regularity and sharing best practices and sharing what kinds of things we're experiencing. Here in Dallas, we're under a mandatory lockdown in Dallas County and in the city of Dallas. Several other counties in the area are similarly, it probably isn't correct to say quarantined, but certainly advised and mandated minimal activities outside the home. So I guess that we have the same questions that all of you have. When do we return to normalcy or some semblance of normalcy? Is it going to be May? Is it going to be June? Could it be July? Will we see a second cycle sometime down the road? It's unlikely from the estimates I've heard that we will have a vaccine going into next year's flu and cold season. So it's entirely possible that we could see the coronavirus reappear, even if it goes away in the near term. So I think the uncertainty of all this is unnerving. There isn't any question about it. I think those of us in athletics are geared towards there is our opponent. Let's go game plan and figure out how to defeat our opponent and see if we can execute on the plan. And unfortunately, this has enough changing components that sort of planning and execution is pretty difficult. So it's a very uncertain environment. I know that it is very difficult on our student athletes. We still have a few in limbo that are on campus or international students or for one reason or another don't have some place to go. And but for the most part, we are much lower in that area than we were 2 weeks ago. I think our athletics directors are all spending a lot of time with student athlete welfare first and foremost on their mind. A5 commissioners and I have been collaborating on what can we do to help and benefit student athletes during the interim. What can we help provide in the way of benefits? What can we do to keep some semblance of normal training for them? Those kinds of things. And so it's a intellectually fascinating and challenging time, but it's also heartbreaking because we know how much effort and energy and emotion our student athletes and our coaches put into the pursuit of excellence in their various sports. So while we have some financial issues and some challenges an uncertain future, more than anything else, we have thousands of young people that have counted on the structure and the engagement in intercollegiate athletics that now have had that suspended in ways that are both heartbreaking and emotionally challenging. So let me stop there, and I'll be happy to answer your questions if you have some.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1. Your first question comes from the line of Barry Trammell.
Yeah, Bob, have you guys got any kind of early picture on the financial ramifications of the spring shutdown and the potential ramifications if you can't start football on time?
Yeah, it's a great question, Barry, and we have done some work on that. The canceled basketball championship games in Kansas City, it looks like it'll cost us about $6.6 million. The NCAA Board of Governors just took action to distribute $225 million compared to $600 million. So we would normally get about $24 million from that. And instead, I think that distribution is going to be around $10 million. So we're going to take some hits there. We are in the process of determining the reductions that we'll see in our television distribution and in our sponsorship fulfillments in conjunction with both the basketball and the other championships that we have. All is not negative, however. We had a second team in the CFP, and so we will receive some money from that. We will have, as a result of what we call member participation subsidies, we'll probably save about $3.5 million between now and the end of the year on that. We got $1 million supplemental basketball revenue payment that came in earlier this year. It's already in the bank. And my guess is that we'll save maybe $2.5 to $4 or $5 million from budget variance in not hosting conference championships and then downsizing conference operations. Everyone is working from home right now. And so we don't know how long that will go on, obviously, but so there are some fairly good size negatives, and there are a few positives that will make a difference. But it looks like the net could be in the 15 to 18 million range, which obviously goes directly to distribution. But it's those are round numbers. It's a little early to determine if that's going to play itself out. And relative to fall, you all are around the sports world, the college sports world, as I am all the time. And you know how much of a driver college football is. It's a driver from a popularity standpoint. It's a driver for schools from a fundraising standpoint. It's a big driver from TV standpoint, and it's a big driver from ticket sales and revenue standpoint. And, we haven't done a lot of modeling, and we haven't done a lot of planning because I just think it's far too early to do that. We certainly are looking at the next 60 to 90 days, and I think depending upon how that goes, we'll begin modeling around what the fall looks like. But you could spend a whole lot of time with it and find out 2 weeks later that the circumstances have changed and your computations are no longer viable. So it's been my decision, and I think the rest of the major conferences are in a similar situation, that we're just beginning to mess around with those numbers a little bit. But obviously, that's a process we're going to have to go through if this next 60 to 90 days tells us that that the fall is in jeopardy.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome, Barry.
Your next question comes from the line of Blair Kirkenhoff.
Hey, Bob. I think you probably just answered this, but I was just going to ask if contingency plans for football had been discussed or broached, or in terms of when to start a season or possibly delaying the start of the season. Sounds like you touched on that just a moment ago, but any informal discussions about that, or what would be, what could be viable for what a season is?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's related to Barry's question, but not exactly the same, because one of the things we are talking about right now is, you know, what does the summer look like? And I think you're asking principally about football, but, you know, we have right. soccer and volleyball and cross country and other things going on during the fall. We also have some traditionally spring sports like tennis and golf that also have competitive seasons in the fall. So it's more than just football. But, you know, as you know, you just can't turn it on and turn it off. We have a lot of kids that are at home right now, and they're not getting regular workouts like they would get at school. They're not getting the lifting and the running and the disruptions that are going on from being away from the structure that you have on campus. And so, you know, I think there's a couple week transition period whenever it happens. And I think if we get to the point where we don't open up again until June 15th, I think we need to look at what that transition window is, what it can include, and then, you know, what impact it has on the rest of preparation. The month of May typically is a heavy lifting and training month, and then the kids get a little bit of time off, and then they report back, and the coaches have camps and clinics going on, and you know, it may be that we can't do any of that this year, and so what do you do to get ready? What do you do to get your kids physically in condition? You know, it used to be that football players would take the off season off, or they'd even play a different sport. Today, these young men are training 7 days a week, 365, whether they're doing it on their own or whether they're doing it in conjunction with a training program. And so you can't just turn it on and turn it off. And so I think that's the part we're thinking about, is what does the transition look like, whether it's in May or whether it's in June or later. What does it do to camp, the preseason camp? Is there a time when we have some sort of OTRs or captain's practices or maybe mini camps? You know, this is a new day, and I think it's going to have to be almost entirely dictated by the circumstances once those circumstances are known, because right now, I don't think there's a crystal ball on the planet that can tell us what's going to happen in the coming months.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Ari Timken.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm good, Ari. I hope you're well as well.
I am well as well, my friend. You talked about name, image, and likeness, and those discussions are ongoing, but how much does that take a back seat now with everything else that's going on your plate?
Well, it's a great question. It does take a back seat at some level, just because everything else is such a hot fire. I mean, it's been all consuming for the last 2 weeks. I have been at home working, as I mentioned, but I have literally been on conference calls from 7:30 in the morning until 7:30 at night, and it has been all consuming. Having said that, we've made some really good progress over the last three or so meetings on name, image, and likeness. And the processes in state legislatures are going forward. The processes in the federal legislature is going forward. I think that NCAA working group is continuing to make progress. And so in the case of the last among those, we certainly expect to make our report by the end of April to the Board of Governors. We're going to have to do it by telephonic meetings over the coming weeks, and they tend not to be as productive or as fruitful as in-person meetings, but we're going to have to do what we have to do. Likewise, the Board of Governors meeting is going to be held, as far as we know, but it will be done as a teleconference. And so, that's all moving down the path. We have 34 states now that have either have bills ready to drop or in some sort of pre-legislative form. We have three in California, Colorado, and Florida that have got bills that are all the way through the system. Now, the good thing is that in the case of those three bills, they all have implementation dates that are into at least 21. So that helps that we don't have there was a time when we thought some of them were going to have immediate implementation dates and therefore we would need to go to court or something like that to make sure they didn't go into effect. But I think we've made progress in helping congressional staffers and elected officials understand that a patchwork of state laws is not going to be successful and almost impossible to manage. I think change is coming, and it should. It's time for us to take a fresh look at this, and how far we'll go remains to be seen. But it's there are an awful lot of people that still have their oars in the water, and I expect that they will, unless we get something between now and the reporting time that would tell us it's that continued consideration is contraindicated. It does sort of make it seem like NIL isn't quite as vitally important as it once was when you compare it to the life and death situations that many Americans are dealing with.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Mac Engel.
Hey, Bob. I was wondering if what your thoughts were and preferences are regarding the NCAA potentially granting an extra year of eligibility for all spring sport athletes who lost this year.
I could capably argue either side of it. I think from pursuant to my earlier comments about the heartbreaking nature of not getting to have your senior year, anyone would have empathy for the young people that have worked so hard and haven't gotten an opportunity. Now, there's a case to be made for winter sport athletes too that weren't able to finish their entire season. They might have been able to finish the regular season, but I came up as a college wrestler, and for college wrestlers, the opportunity to wrestle in the Division I tournament at the end of the year is the pinnacle of opportunity. And for young people that are trying to capture a second or a third or even a fourth national championship, lose a year is an enormous thing. We also have a lot of Olympians that are were either taking Olympic gap years this year or had their training plans altered by the absence of the games this summer. So it's got a lot of moving parts. I will tell you the thing that I'm most concerned about is that I worry that with the uncertainty of our current circumstance, we might find ourselves with a disruption in the fall or winter next year due to a rebound in the coronavirus, and everybody is telling us it's going to be around for a while, and and part of the time it's going to be around without a vaccine. If we have that sort of disruption again, then are we going to offer fall sport athletes another year? And how does that interface with, you know, their academic undertakings and those sorts of things? So it has a lot of complexity. It is very expensive as a result of continuation of scholarships. And there's a number of different NCAA bylaws that need to be altered in order to accommodate some of the elements of squad lists and number of scholarships and how equivalencies are broken up and those kinds of things. So it's got a lot of moving parts, and we're just starting to talk about it. But the one thing I have kind of come to closure on with it is I really think as much as everybody wants to know if they're going to get another year, I think we would be well served by waiting a period of time to make the decisions, just to be able to see a little bit more of the data and to see what the next 30 or 60 days brings us. And we know that the student athlete population, the coaching population, want answers as soon as possible. But in the interest of making high quality solutions be the outcome, I think we're well advised to wait a bit.
Is there any chance, just one quick follow-up, is there any chance that the vote that was supposed to occur on Monday regarding this issue, is there any chance they might just delay it for because I can't imagine you're alone in this sentiment in terms of let's just give us another 30, 45, 90 days to see what else we know before ultimately making the decision?
Yeah, I was on a call where it was discussed, and I think there is as you know, Division II made a decision on what they were going to do with it, and so I think ultimately, this is a council decision by virtue of the structure of the NCAA, but I wouldn't be surprised if the board sought to weigh in on it, and even if it gets discussed or acted upon on Monday, I think there likely will be some additional oversight on it. But I don't know that there is the urgency of getting to it Monday. But I'm no longer on the council, so I haven't been a party to every conversation on it. But my preference would be to slow it down a bit.
Thanks, Bob.
Your next question comes from the line of Heather Dinich.
Hey, Bob, if you could go back to the NCAA's announcement earlier today about the $225 million in June that you were talking about earlier, can you kind of break it down a little bit more in terms of how much does it help you and how much more help do you need as a conference given everything that's happened financially?
We maintain an operating reserve, and we had some money beyond that was a result of money that we withheld last year for another purpose. But I think we will be able to make our members whole on this year's distribution. But, you know, how much we spread the pain and how long the pain lasts is another matter altogether. And we have some unknowns in our budget that remain and will probably remain for a while. But I expect that we will be able to make our members whole on what we forecast as this year's distribution. But to the earlier questions, it's a whole new ballgame if we find ourselves not playing football, because it affects everything we do. It affects the largest portion of our TV contract, and it affects the largest source of campus revenue, which is live gate. So it's anything that I say regarding finances has to make the assumption that we're going to be back to playing football in the fall. If that doesn't happen, then the underpinning of what we've known as normal goes away, and we'll have major changes to make.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tommy Birch.
Hey, Bob. I was wondering, how are you advising Big 12 schools to manage their budgets with reduced revenue coming in and kind of this uncertain future?
I would refer you to them on that, because I don't spend much time advising our athletics directors or CEOs on managing their budgets. They know a lot more about their budgets than I do, but I can advise them on trends in terms of our distributable revenue. And it's as you know, we distribute something approaching $40 million a year to each of our schools, and so you know, it's not an insignificant part of their budget. For some, it's almost half. For others, it's somewhere around, you know, 20%. But so they're not all equally situated, and so they on occasion when they know that I've sat in their chair, I might get a question from somebody on something pertaining to finances on campus. But generally speaking, they're more than capable of managing it without my input. And so the only thing they really need input on is, are we going to get what we saw on the budget? And is there anything that's going to keep us from getting that? So that's, and the other thing is, you know, we will be looking for ways to save money in our operations. And I think given the environment, the financial environment and the general health environment, I think you'll see budgets on campus flat, and I think you'll see salary budgets flat, and they'll even be places where there will be declines in operating budgets. And so, you know, it's not a time when we're going to throw a lot of money around. We're going to have to all be very careful about our management of resources. But in terms of our distributions, in the near term, I think we're in very good shape, even after the reduction in the NCAA basketball units. And, you know, we'll see what comes after that.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Kersey.
Yep.
Jason, your line is open.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hello. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jason.
Some Big 12 schools still haven't officially canceled their spring games. Is that a step you guys have considered taking as a conference, or do you still think spring games are possible for some of these schools?
I think it's very unlikely that we're going to have any spring games, and I don't think, except for those that have already had some days of spring practice, I don't believe we'll have any additional days of spring practice. You know, we're looking at a window for return to activity that is, you know, 6 or 8 weeks, and I just think it's very unlikely that that's going to happen.
So as a conference, have you considered just coming out and canceling them altogether, or are you leaving that stuff up to the schools?
Well, the conference actually doesn't control that. When schools do conference or do spring practice, and whether or if they have a spring game is up to them. It isn't scheduled through the conference office. So theoretically they can do those things on their own. But you know, we do control the number of days of spring practice and how that is all managed, and I think it's going to be a while before we go back to any live activity on campuses.
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Randy Peterson.
Robert, how are you?
Good, Randy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Is this the fact that the schools won't be getting as much money from the reimbursements, most likely, is this kind of the reset that college football, especially football, needed as far as coaching contracts are concerned? Maybe.
Yeah, Well, I don't, you know, I haven't heard anybody make any announcements that they were going to reduce coaches' contracts. But you know, this probably should cause us all to ponder what's really important in college athletics and perhaps indeed in our life beyond college athletics. You know, when you're up against an opponent like we are, I think you begin to treasure some of the things you've taken for granted, and some of the things that we fight over. You know, I mentioned the NIL. Some of the things that people have thought were major points of contention, you know, the sharp edges have been taken off of that a little bit, and so you know, I think there can be a recentering, and I think there can be a renewed recognition of just how much of a blessing it is to be able to be involved in college athletics and to have the chance to be on a campus and to participate in something that you love and get an education. And I think that's what your question is getting at. And I think I agree with you. The answer is there probably will be a resetting. I don't know that it will necessarily translate to changes in compensation, but you know, time will tell on that.
Bob, one more thing. Let's say there is a college football season. What would it look like? What do you think it could look like as far as differences, as you know, from last year to assuming there will be a college football season? From a fan standpoint, fan enjoyment standpoint, possibly, will fans be allowed? You know, just things like that.
Well, it's hard to imagine looking up into a grandstand and seeing people sitting 6 feet apart. But beyond that, you know, I think there probably will be lots of people that give consideration to what kind of public assembly they want to do. I was reading the article about the Italian League soccer match that was reported to be the epicenter of the problems in Spain and Italy. And you know, you think about it in the context, it was a relatively small crowd compared to what we get at our major football games. And so, you know, I do think it will cause people to take pause and wonder what kinds of things they're sharing other than enthusiasm for a game and enthusiasm for a school or a team when they go into a stadium. And I suppose it's possible that we could end up returning to some form of competition before we got to the point where we were comfortable with public assembly, and we could end up with what we thought we might end up with in basketball, and that is playing in front of no crowd. On the one hand, that allows you to watch it on television, but the environment would certainly be far poorer as a result of not having an enthusiastic crowd in the stand. So, you know, it's as I say, it's hard to forecast those things because we have things happening right now that we couldn't have envisioned 3 weeks ago.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Tyler Palmateer.
Hi, Bob. Lincoln Riley spoke this morning, and he mentioned a couple things that he hasn't been able to allow, that Oklahoma hasn't been allowed to do due to conference rules. He mentioned virtual meetings and sending players equipment. Is the Big 12 nearing a resolution where some of that's going to change? Those two things, he mentioned a couple others, but those two things in particular.
Yeah, thanks, Tyler. We're coming up on March 29th, which was the date we set to reconsider what we were going to be doing in the longer term. We have gone about the process of trying to do that along with our A5 colleagues so that we're all kind of singing off the same sheet music. And I don't know that we all have to be doing the same things, but you know, we're taking a good look at everything as it begins to calm down just a little bit. You know, what we can do with practices, what we can do with voluntary workouts, what it means to be, you know, at trying to do things from a distance. You know, what can you send to them? Can you send food additives? Can you send supplements? Can you send protein powder? Can you send shoes? Can you send sweats? What can you do with stretching bands and foam rollers and apparel that you would regularly use on campus? And you know, how long does it all go? When do we do a look in, and how do we go about revisiting things? And so, you know, the delivery of the ones things that we already have agreed upon is that we need to make sure that sports medicine and physical therapy and rehabilitation are all taken care of. We need to make sure that we keep up with academic support, and we need to give support to the kids in mental health and wellness ways. And so, you know, we are continuing to work on all of that stuff, and I believe are coalescing around some answers. And we'll be, in the case of the Big 12, I think we'll be ready to move ahead with some additional guidance. We have a board meeting on Saturday, and I expect that will be a topic of discussion when we get together.
Thanks. I was just curious, too, was the not being able to do virtual meetings an oversight, or what was kind of the hang up with that part?
I'm not going to get into the specifics of any of it. We felt like, given the circumstances nationally, that everybody ought to shut it down, that coaches ought to go home and take care of their families, and kids ought to go home and do what they're directed to do in their locale. So we're still trying to figure that out in ways that kind of have all of us singing on off the same sheet music. And I think we'll get there sooner rather than later.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Your next question comes from the line of Kirk Bowles.
Bob, was there any kind of consensus among Big 12 coaches and ADs about maybe restoring that year of eligibility for winter and spring sports athletes?
It was kind of a mixed bag, Kirk, and it still is. I mean, it's not resolved, and I think there are some that would advocate for winter and spring sports. I think there would be some that would advocate just for spring sports. I think there are some that would be of a mind that we ought to wait a while and make a decision with a little bit more information. So the continuum that I described earlier, I think, is probably present among our athletics directors.
Okay. And
their positions are all determined in large measure by talking to their coaches.
Right. And on the name, image, and likeness, are there any main sticking points that are keeping this from going forward faster? And would there be any kind of money cap on how much athletes could make?
Well, I'm not going to get into the second of those because we're still in negotiations and discussions. Relative to the sticking points, there are dozens of sticking points, things that you could make decisions to do something, to do nothing, to do something in between, and they all are interrelated. If this wasn't extraordinarily complex, we'd have figured it out a long time ago. And so there are lots of sticking points, but it depends on who you ask. What's a great decision for the Big 12 may not be a great decision for the Missouri Valley and may be a terrible decision for the Northeast Conference.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Robert Allen.
First, Bob, I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Sure, Robert. How you doing?
I'm doing good. long walks with the wife and dog. So they shut the gym down here in Edmond. But a couple of quick questions. Your conference meetings in May, have you made a decision on those?
The early May meeting in Phoenix that we typically have with the football and men's and women's basketball coaches, we will be doing those by teleconference. We won't be going to Arizona. And the Fiesta Summit was really one of the reasons why we went there, and the Fiesta Summit has been canceled for this year. We haven't made a decision on our late May meetings. Those include our ADs and SWAs, faculty reps, and our presidents. And we don't know what we're going to do with that yet. That's one of the topics that we'll be talking about on the board call this Saturday.
The other thing I know, in an SEC similar meeting or teleconference, Greg Sankey said they're full steam ahead on media day for football, which doesn't surprise me coming from, you know, those folks. But where do you stand on that, or is that too early to talk about?
Yeah, we haven't given a lot of thought to it. I'm sure Bob Berta has.
Right.
We have a new sponsor coming on board for that event, Academy Sports, and so obviously we want to hold it. It's in the middle of July, and so we don't know what the circumstances are going to be between now and the middle of July. So it's still on the calendar, and we still plan on doing it, but it's just yet another event that we're going to have to think about and make decisions if we can, you know, get the best information we can and make it in light of modern circumstances.
Then here's the biggie. There's already, I mean, it's almost like summer with what we're going through here. It's the lull, and we all know what comes up in the lull: conference realignment, and of course the TV contracts are getting ever closer. Do you devote any time to that? Do you have anything you can say regarding that? And certainly lost revenue now, it could become more important when the contracts come up and you try and maybe even make up for some of that.
Well, the thing you have to remember is that the motivation for past realignment was the capture of cable households. And with a shrinking cable universe, that motivation is gone. And so there has to be some other motivation that replaces it. And, you know, adding members to your conference without identifying substantial new revenues, all that does is divide the pie in more pieces. So an awful lot of what was the motivation over the last 15 years has now gone by the wayside.
Strengthening the teams you have, especially in football, is that a possibility that you have to look at, though, in the ever-changing landscape?
Well, I think our coaches would tell you that we don't need it any tougher. Every game is a pretty good test of your capabilities, talent, and resiliency.
Thanks, Commissioner.
You're welcome, Robert.
Your next question comes from the line of Derek Redd.
Hi, Bob. When the NCAA tournament got canceled, I'm sure you guys knew that this was coming down the pike, the reduced revenue distribution. How quickly after that announcement did you and the rest of the Big 12 higher-ups kind of circle around and kind of put together kind of a plan to maybe stem the tide? And how much has the constant uncertainty and the growing uncertainty kind of thrown a monkey wrench into that?
We were very fortunate when all of this was happening in real time. And between noon and 7 o'clock on Wednesday, it was absolutely wild. And the same thing was true between about 8 a.m. and 12 on Thursday, 2 weeks ago. But we were fortunate that all of our athletic directors were there, and we had been scheduled to have meetings, and so we were able to have really good discussions while we were there. We also got our board on calls three times over a day and a half period, and I'm very appreciative to them for making the time, because they were obviously dealing with a lot of institutional fires as well. So, you know, we first took the step to play what we thought was going to be a Thursday without fans in the stands, and that required us printing 125 tickets for each team party and doing that for four games and completely reorganizing. And so we were doing a lot of things in real time, but we had the right people at the table to help us with it. So all of that went actually pretty smoothly. I would have to say that it's been almost a constant evolution since then, because we've been just finding out so much more information about the progression of the virus and where it's progressing and how it's progressing and what the forecast is for the future progression of it. And, you know, all of those things are just estimates, and we take them as estimates, but you rely upon the best experts that you can. And in the case of being in Kansas City, I mean, we were the KU Medical Center team was no more than a phone call away at any point in time. The public health folks were involved. The mayor's office was involved. The sports commission, the folks at the Sprint Center and at the municipal auditorium. It's got a lot of moving parts, and I think it's going to continue to evolve. I don't think for a minute that we have access to all of the information that we need to say, well, we're going to be back playing on May 15th, or we're going to be back playing on June 15th. I don't think it's that kind of environment. I remember well the time period after 9/11. And, you know, that one was awfully difficult on our nation. And yet you little by little saw returns to normalcy after 3 or 4 days, and then after 10 days, and then after a month. And this just has a much longer tail, and it has a great deal more uncertainty. And, you know, it's an invisible enemy that we really don't know fully how to fight it. And so I just think it's very presumptuous to try and force athletics decisions into an environment that is so uncertain and so universal in its impact on our society. I just think we all have to stand back and recognize that, you know, we're managing important games, but they're just games. And it's that context, I think, that's kind of helped me to stay focused and think about these things in ways that are perhaps a little different than we might have in the past.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of John Hoover.
Bob, thanks for doing this call. Hey, I know what you said about not planning too far ahead because things can change tomorrow, literally, but I'm sure you still want to be prepared. So to what extent have you guys, either in the Big 12 office or retained consultants, what extent have you put together contingency plans for football? And do those plans range from full schedule to conference-only schedule to no schedule at all, anything in between?
Haven't done anything with it, John. I know individual staff members are given thought to that. I'm sure Ed Stewart has given a lot of thought to it. And in the case of other sports, others have as well. But in terms of a unified approach to it, you know, we would like to see a little more information. We're 2 weeks into this, and people tell us it's 6 to 8, some say 10 to 12, some say we're going to get a rebound. I just don't think there's a lot of, I don't think there's just a lot of credibility to putting together anything other than very rudimentary plans. Right now, our plan is to play the football season as it's scheduled. If we find out that we have to depart from that, we will do so, and we will do it with plenty of time to let people know what it is we're thinking and to challenge what we're thinking. But you know, that's another area where I think collaboration with the other A5 and the and with the other FBS programs, it really makes a lot of sense, because I think we all want to do the same thing. If we get forced into an 8-game season, I don't think we want to be playing 8 games and somebody else is playing 9 and somebody's playing 6. That kind of collaboration, believe it or not, we work like crazy to beat the heck out of each other when our conferences play one another. But the 5 commissioners and to an extent the 32 commissioners, we get along pretty well, and we share a lot of information and we share a lot of common problems. And so, you know, when the time comes, I don't believe it'll be the Big 12 acting unilaterally. I believe it'll be a collaboration with a number of other conferences.
Okay, and I don't mean to be all doom and gloom here, you know me, but if there's no football in the fall, could that mean something as drastic as a reduction in scholarships for other sports? You know, the sports that are largely funded by football money, depending on what certain schools can allocate, could those scholarships even be reduced by this thing, the loss of revenue?
Yeah, well, I don't want to do too much in the area of Armageddon forecasting, but football drives an enormous amount of the resources that our universities rely on. As a percentage of the total university, the athletic budget is generally fairly small percentage. Having said that, all of the universities are going to be under stress. People are going to be under stress sending their children to universities. And so I don't know that universities are going to be in a position to bridge finance athletics programs in any sort of meaningful way. So, you know, there could be a very wide range of things. I don't want to get into forecasting what those could be, but if the money goes away, it certainly necessitates difficult decisions.
And your final question comes from the line of Matt Mosley.
Hey, Bob, appreciate this. And I'm just kind of curious, you've always monitored other sports. You were huge with the Olympics in the past. With the NBA, there's been talk from Mark Cuban and others about a possible, you know, as early as mid-May, if things improve, and then early June playing games. How big of an impact do you think, although obviously that's a whole different thing, but how big of an impact could that have even on you guys moving toward the fall and into the summer if a sport like that was able to get up and going again?
Well, the fact that Gobert tested positive in the NBA was really impactful for our student athletes. I think that's when COVID-19 became real for our basketball players. I think they began to get very nervous when it became up close and personal, when people that they admired and emulated came down with the disease. So, you know, I think the NBA can have some influence. It's you know, our president has said he'd like to come back to beginning of a startup by Easter. Mark Cuban is actually a neighbor here in Dallas, and he's a visionary in a lot of ways. And if he thinks there's a opportunity to come back in mid-May, I certainly am going to listen to that. I think we're all getting the same advice that they're getting, and that is that this is going to have a longer tail than that. And yet the more some get back to normalcy, the more all can get back to normalcy. And so, you know, I think all, I hope he's right. I hope they're back playing in mid-May, because if that happens, it'll mean that that we can get ourselves back on campus fairly soon, and we can come up with a structure for the off-season training in preparation for the fall sports, especially football. And that would be a very positive sign for all of us if that could happen.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate that. By the way, last thing, did the having two schools like Baylor and Kansas that had an absolute shot at winning the national title, did that even – I mean, all of this has been devastating, and I know sports, we got to put it in perspective, but it is – was it even more devastating, you know, that it even normal, or it could have been, with the fact that you got two teams that had such a great shot from your conference, and you could arguably maybe two of the best, you know, two of the best teams in the country?
It hasn't been lost on us that this would have been a year when we could compete at a very high level. And by the way, the way that the NCAA distribution works on a 6-year rolling basis, the more games you win, the more units you successfully achieve. And so probably had a financial impact on us too, but they are both excellent basketball teams, very well coached, and both would have had a chance to play very deep in the tournament.
And that is all the questions we have.
Thank you all for being on.
Thank you. That concludes today. Thank you, everyone, for participating. Also, as a point of note, later today, as soon as it becomes available, a recording of the call will be posted on Big12Sports.com. Again, thank you, everyone, for participating, and have a great day.
And that was Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby. Thanks for listening.